Hello and welcome to Written Reflections. I am publishing episode 8 today, April 8th. The recording was taken a week ago when I was in North Carolina. And unfortunately, the audio quality did not come out as well as I would have hoped. And so I ask you to bear with me as you listen to this podcast, some of the areas that sound is a little hard to hear. But I felt that the content and the discussion that was held during this episode is well worth your time. And I think it's very appropriate for the time that we are now experiencing this first part of April. We are going to talk about scenario planning. And if you think about everything we're going through right now with tariffs and some of the uncertainty about how companies and countries are going to address this particular topic, I believe offers some great insight, some great tools and ideas about how companies can best prepare and navigate the ever-increasing changes that we're all experiencing. And so I hope you'll enjoy this episode, and I will go ahead and set it in motion right now. Thank you. Hello, this is Jeff Rittner, and welcome back to Rittner Reflections, a forum to address the dynamic, complex, and essential nature of cross-border trade in our ever-changing world. Today, I am here in North Carolina, where I am spending a couple of weeks with my family, enjoying the North Carolina sunshine and, I would say, rain, and it's been a wonderful time with spending time with family. I'm also excited to be in North Carolina because I have an opportunity to host this podcast, this episode, with a friend of mine named Sheldon Bernard. And Sheldon also is in North Carolina. He lives here with his family. And Sheldon and I got to know each other several months ago, and we've discovered that we have a very common interest in this topic that we'll talk about today called scenario planning. Sheldon is the owner of the A440 Management LLC. This is a management consulting firm that specializes in helping organizations make decisions under uncertainty. And I thought there could be no better person than Sheldon to spend some time with, because as you all know, I've been talking since the beginning of these podcasts about the time of uncertainty that we live in. And all of us are feeling every single day this uncertainty as to what is going to happen, and especially what is going to happen in the world of cross-border trade. And so this is a really timely discussion with Sheldon, because this is what he spends his time doing. And I think he's going to have a lot of great insights for us. And I'm really looking forward to having this discussion. So with that, I would like to welcome you today, Sheldon.
Great to be here with you in person. And Jeff didn't mention that, yeah, scenario planning, all of the uncertainty around trade is an area of overlap. But we had the same employer for a while, overlapped at 10 years there, although we never actually met, which is not surprising given how big that company is. But yeah, as Jeff mentioned, we're going to be spending some time talking about scenario planning, but I can give listeners an idea of why should anyone listen to my view on this? I've started a small advisory firm that spends most of its time on decision making under uncertainty. And how that ties into scenario planning is there's just some situations where you necessarily can't model the right outcome. You may not even be able to get your arms around what that looks like other than using something like scenario planning. So it's something that we do quite a bit. I've done it while I was working at Intel. I've done it at P&G and in various other places in my working career. And it's just something I don't think enough companies use. And then if they are using it, it ends up not being in a way that's helpful for them in their actual decision making. So we're a decision making firm. We basically help you de-risk whatever uncertain strategy you're working on. And we use a lot of these tools to do that. So that's us in a nutshell. We're also here based in North Carolina and upset that my UNC Tar Heels are knocked out. Wow. But happy that they were even to be there in the first place. So yeah.
Well, there's a lot of folks in the area here that are very happy with Duke.
Yeah. I'll bet they are. I've met a few.
Yeah, this was a big basketball weekend, wasn't it? I think it was. Actually had a hosted, I think, some of the games right here at the Ronaldo Center, was it?
Yeah, it's been a disappointment. But again, it's a scenario that we were prepared for.
That's right. You knew. Well, you know, I have to say, I come out here to North Carolina, you know, 4 or 5 times a year. And one of the things I noticed is people really are into college sports. If I'm here now, it's basketball, right? Because this is March Madness. It's like,
oh, yeah.
If I'm here in the fall, it's college football. And I've gone to places where it's like a place you eat and they've got TV screens and there's no shortage of games. There might be like 5 games. They're all North Carolina teams playing. So it's a very popular thing here in North Carolina.
Yeah. It's a big part of the culture.
Yes. So, well, listen, Sheldon, one of the reasons why I am so excited to spend some time with you on this topic is because over the last 3 months, I started this podcast in January. Over the last 3 months, I have communicated to my listeners over and over that we are living in a time of incredible uncertainty. And I started my first podcast by outlining where I felt folks in the world of trade, or I call cross-border trade, should be concerned and think about. And so scenario planning fits so well because even though we've gone 3 months now down the road, everybody's, from what I can tell, seems to be just as uncertain as they were at the beginning of the year as you watch what's happening day by day. You know, if you happen to watch the news,
yeah.
You know, episode that I recorded, I did an interview with some folks that were attending a trade conference, an export controls conference.
Mm.
And one of the individuals said, yeah, there really wasn't a whole lot of new information. And we all agreed at the end, if we were to pick a word to describe the conference, it was uncertainty. And because they left just as uncertain as when they arrived. So I think this is kind of the world we're in, this especially in the world of cross-border trade, which is what I'm focused on a lot, is this uncertainty of, you know, will there be tariffs? Will there not? You know, are there going to be further restrictions on export? You know, or not? You know, should companies, you know, change their business model or their supply chain in anticipation of maybe not being able to do business in a certain country like China? And so that this uncertainty just kind of is pervasive and people get stuck, I think. And so I'm really excited to talk to you because I know this is what you spend your time doing and you've thought through these things. So I'm very excited to hear from you and get some ideas of what you're seeing in this area of uncertainty.
Yeah, I agree. And as you and I have talked in the past, I've had conversations, maybe 30 or 40 leaders, executives, wide range of industries. And it has been really surprising to me, and not in a positive way, the amount of folks that just are hoping that things go back to the way that they were.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
And we wrote a series of LinkedIn articles, really at the behest of a bunch of clients and others, to say, hey, share some of you thinking about this. And one of the ones that I wrote that seems to have gotten quite a bit of traction was, wait and see is not a good idea.
Mm.
Because if you're waiting for things to become more certain, that's not a good bet. Because as you and I were talking about earlier, even if there's a major shift in Congress in the midterms, we're going to see an unwinding of the uncertainty around policy for 4 years. And even if there's a major shift in the way the administration is composed, the next presidential election, we're still going to have carryover for probably a year or two. So we're talking 6 years of pretty significant uncertainty around trade policy. I don't think any company can afford to just sit and wait for that to resolve, not with the type of volatility and policy that we're seeing now. Right. And, you know, we do spend some time in game theory, and I can tell you that there's reactions, and nobody would be surprised about this one. We do something and then the other parties do something back and forth, back and forth. And that is just going to create, I think, persistent uncertainty. And I think we've become lulled over the last 10 years into things being more manageable and easier to predict. I think those days are over.
Right.
I could be wrong. But, you know, I'm not sure if you're hearing or seeing the same thing.
Well, my experience, Sheldon, over the last 7 years has been nothing but uncertain and chaos.
Yeah.
A lot of trade. mm-hmm. Up until 2017, it was pretty routine. I mean, if I think back to my career in Intel and what we were doing, it was pretty routine. I mean, we had a program at Intel that was built around being efficient, being cost effective, and being predictable. That was kind of how it was. And so when 2017 came, and I think the first thing that kind of dropped when the first Trump administration were the tariffs. They used Section 301 and they slapped, you know, tariffs on, directly on the products that we make and a lot of the equipment that we used. And it created quite a, you know, a firestorm of scrambling around trying to figure out what exactly we were going to do. One of the things that made it, I think, it kind of really brought it home was for the first time we were actually now having to pay dollars the door, yeah. Right on, you know, to bring goods in that we never used to. And so that got everybody's attention and we began to really put task force together and kind of deal with it. But again, it wasn't anticipated. And then it became a scramble. So I wonder if you have some thoughts on this idea of anticipating and what, you know, what folks should consider.
Yeah, I do. I think it's a bit of a reframe. And I guess we'll get a little bit into some of the mm-hmm. concept. We may not have time for the detailed mechanics of scenario planning.
Right.
But conceptually, scenario planning allows you to stress test your thinking more than anything else. It's not about predicting the future, but it is about anticipating what might go wrong.
Okay.
And are we prepared? And are we resilient? So I think when it comes to the anticipation of some of the things that you've gone through, you might not be able to predict them, but we should be able to anticipate them. But when we kind of want to take an existing playbook into an uncertain world and just hope for the best, mm-hmm. you're not even oriented mentally to be in a place to anticipate. And if you can't anticipate, you can't plan. You can't plan, you can't hedge.
Right.
Can't hedge, then your company just bears all that risk.
Yeah.
And I think it's the cheapest insurance you could get.
Yeah.
Because to do a good scenario planning exercise is weeks.
Yeah.
People's time. We're talking about exposures that are 10, 20, 30% of firm value in some cases.
Right.
But to me, it's a no-brainer. I just don't understand why it's not done more often and with more rigor.
One of the things that we did at Intel, and I think many companies do this, is we had a program that we went through on an annual basis. It was called our Enterprise Risk Management. And we did. We looked at what were those, you know, catastrophic, you know, big ticket items that might happen that could have a huge impact on the enterprise. So we looked at those. But, you know, my experience was it seemed like even though you kind of walk through the steps to think through some of those things, it's so difficult to really identify those. I'll give you two examples that both of them I don't think we did a very good job. The first one is nobody anticipated the pandemic.
Nobody.
No matter, I can go back to those charts we did to figure out the enterprise risk management. Nobody had pandemic on there, right? That was one. Then the second one,
and what should we have?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
But the second one, and this one, we I can honestly say we should have, and well, we didn't. And I don't think we were alone. I think many, many companies, the whole invasion of Ukraine by Russia.
Yeah.
And those signals were there since many years. And I'm not sure we fully, and that was another situation that caused huge impact.
My view on that is a little bit different, but then, you know, our firm is grounded in the decision sciences. I'm on both sides. So the descriptive side, which is what do you actually do? Right. Behavioral economics, some of the more stuff that's rooted in judgment and decision-making psychology, mm-hmm. but then also just as heavily on decision analysis, which is far more quantitative, mm-hmm. rules of logic. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you learn from that is a lot of the exercises around scenario planning or future forecasting, mm-hmm. I don't want to say they're useless, but they are useless mm-hmm. because information that can't alter your decisions mm-hmm. has no value.
Right.
And that's a very tough thing for companies to get their arms around. Mm-hmm. We want to survey the whole world.
Yeah.
You get comfortable with looking at certain signals in certain places, and then you miss things like, what about a pandemic? What about political instability due to war or conflict right. in places that are impacting our supply chain significantly.
Right.
And because those have not been things that have happened persistently in the past, mm-hmm. the way that we gather and look at information mm-hmm. gives us these blind spots.
Right.
So what the decision scientists will tell you to do is don't think of it that way.
Right.
Look at your supply chain and say, what are all of the things that must go right mm-hmm. for this to work? Mm-hmm. And what are the areas where we would have to change mm-hmm. something we're doing and under what conditions? So you work from the failure of your supply chain mm-hmm. backwards.
I see.
So what that does is it gives you a very different set of vectors to look at. And then you've got to build your monitoring capability mm-hmm. around those vectors. Mm-hmm. What I see a lot of is the reverse. Mm-hmm. Is I don't remember who said it, but you know, we always were in the risk of fighting the last war. It's, oh, well, this is the stuff that's traditionally been a problem. We sense it. I want to get more resolution into that. So we get a little bit more sensing. You go to more conferences.
Right.
But that's usually not the stuff that kills you. It's yeah. the stuff that, it's the punch that you don't see coming.
Right.
I think Ali said, that's the one that knocks you out.
Right.
The only way that I know of to get there is to basically look at it's the NASA approach, right?
Right.
What are all the failure modes of this rocket?
Yeah.
And then develop a right size monitoring capability mm-hmm. for those. Mm-hmm. And that's really going to depend on the size of your firm.
Right.
A place like Intel could have had a whole team of people looking
yeah.
across everything. Smaller companies might not.
Right.
And you might have to just do the exercise mm-hmm. and then figure out, you can't monitor all the stuff. What's the stuff that's most crucial? Mm-hmm. And then be okay with the fact that you will not be able to predict it all.
Right.
But we can be more resilient than we are today. I believe that.
Right. Right. This is I think, one of the challenges in our situation is there's a lot of data of what might happen.
Too much data.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we should be able to start, as you said, begin to start working backwards and figure out what if this happens and so on. I mean, let's take tariffs.
Yeah.
Okay. We've been talking about tariffs. I've been talking about tariffs for a while now. And what's interesting is as of today, you know, March 24th today, the only tariffs that have been levied are additional tariffs against China. And steel and aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, all the other haven't actually happened yet, right? And so there's time to do this scenario planning and figure out, you know, when these tariffs come, have we figured out, you know, where we need to adjust?
I agree with you. And there's another piece I would add to that, a yes and, mm-hmm. is the administration's playbook is out there for the world to yeah. see. Mm-hmm. So we know what the strategic intent is.
Yes.
We know what's on the hopper to be yep. implemented.
Right.
It's just an issue of timing. Mm-hmm. So we can do a much better job of preparing for tariff scenarios than we currently are. Mm-hmm. And even I know April 2nd, that USMCA,
yeah.
those negotiations occur with earnest. That's not going to be a check the box exercise.
Right.
That's going to be, all right, let's really look at this yes. for real.
However, I read this morning, I think it was this morning, I read that now there was some talk that they may back off.
So, yeah, right? Your guess is as good as mine.
Right, right, yeah. But I mean,
I would be building yeah. scenarios around
absolutely.
That. Yeah, so I had this thought. You and I were talking about, business language is interesting because we all use the same terms, but we always mean the same thing. Mm-hmm. And when you said folks came back from that event and we're talking about, we're now as uncertain as we were before.
Yeah.
I keep hearing that same thing from leaders I'm talking to. And I ask them, like, when you say uncertainty, what do you mean? How are you classifying
yeah.
it? And I get a wide range of answers. So I'll share with listeners the framework we use. Call it the glaive, mm-hmm. which is like a long medieval thing. It's like a cutting. It's like a weapon.
Okay.
Lets you from a horseback, like chop up stuff without getting close to it. So this yeah. is our way of like being far back,
yeah,
50,000 foot and looking at uncertainty.
Yeah.
There's really two vectors to anything being uncertain. It's a theoretical underpinning of whatever the phenomena is. Mm-hmm. There's something that you're thinking about where there's like a very well-defined theory of how it works. And then that's one vector. And then the other one is how observable is that phenomenon? So if there's no theory that explains it well, and it's something that you don't see all the time, that's a different type of uncertainty than there's a very disciplined theory. Everybody knows how it works. Mm-hmm. There's laws in the physics. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we see all the time. Those two things are totally mm-hmm. different in the way a company needs to approach them. So the first place we start in scenario planning is we start thinking about what type of uncertainty are you dealing with? I think Rumsfeld said there's what you don't know, what you know, what you don't know, what you don't know that you don't know, or some variable, yeah. some variation of yeah. that. So the GLAVE helps us think about what type of uncertainty is it? Mm-hmm. Because that will help you as an organization design, like, what needs to be different about our scenario planning. Mm-hmm. And some of the worst cases, the scenario planning we do, you wouldn't even call it scenario planning. The military calls it war gaming.
Okay. Yeah.
And that is a different animal than a traditional scenario plan.
In what way?
Well, in a war game, you are not just thinking about the future. You're literally getting different players and actors mm-hmm. to role play all the conflicting interests mm-hmm. and behaviors, mm-hmm. putting them together in a situation where you present those scenarios and you allow them the freedom and latitude to make real decisions that right. will have consequences.
Right.
And you do multiple rounds of that, and it will really allow you to stress test in a way that you can't mm. because of the type of uncertainty that you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And the military has been doing this since, well, if we want to be honest, thousands of years, yeah. starting with the Prussians, right? Right. And Kriegsspiel and some of those old military yeah. war games. So we've got one coming up in 2 days. And I brought that up because I'm realizing there's traditional scenario analysis.
Right.
And then there's war gaming. And we're at a point now with some of the tariff stuff. Mm-hmm. Some companies probably need to think about doing some sort of a war gaming exercise.
Right.
Because there's a tit-for-tat component of all of this. There's mm-hmm. a cause-effect component of this. And there's just stuff that all the brainstorming in the world won't tell you how right. someone with a different set of incentives is going to behave.
Right.
Finding people who can role-play that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we've got to hire them as retired folks and yeah. bring them into the room. You're going to do that role for us in a couple of war games. It's sort of the tariff sheriff.
I'm looking forward to that, yes.
Yeah. And letting that play out in an afternoon.
Yes.
It is phenomenal what you can get.
Right. Yeah. So from, let's stick with tariffs for a second. From that perspective, if I understand the war game, is you would take your business, and let's say you have manufacturing in Mexico, mm-hmm. or you have manufacturing in China, and you have to bring goods into the U.S. So you would yep. scenario plan, what happens if we get a 35% tariff on goods coming from Mexico.
Right.
So then what do we do, right? Do we pay it and pass on the cost? Do we change our supply chain so that we're actually bringing the goods in from somewhere else? Do we actually think about manufacturing, which, by the way, if we made that choice, that's not going to happen overnight.
No.
Right. So
exactly.
So how do you?
You're going to pay. You will pay something in the interim. Yeah,
exactly. So yeah. I think that's it, in my mind. That really, to me, confirms what you're saying. That if you don't get going on this now,
that
just makes it more difficult, and you may end up paying more until you can get to a place that you've mitigated. Right. So it sounds like it's really something that companies should be doing more.
Yeah, I agree. And I got a sad story. There is a firm, we've had an excellent relationship over the years, but they had a major exposure to federal contracting.
Okay.
And we're harping on them to do some scenario planning, mm-hmm. Based on how competitive mm-hmm. your industry is. Mm-hmm. And as we dug into Project 2025 last year, mm-hmm. saying, hey, these are real viable risk of concern of major cuts in the federal workforce and maybe some impoundment of funding and some of those things. You all should do your scenario planning, and then we should do an afternoon war game with your executive team because mm-hmm. we think the wrecking ball's coming. Mm-hmm. And it was like, we've existed through multiple mm-hmm. presidential transitions mm-hmm. for 50 years. We were here for the first administration's view on this. So on and so forth. It's back and forth. And the point I kept making, which I think you're also making, is there comes a point in time where you will just have to react.
Yeah.
You're going to be on fire, so to speak. You will just have to react. You will not have the time or the luxury to plan. And when you do that, all of the empirical literature, all of the science, and all of human history tells us that you will be suboptimal in your decisions. It's just the way it works.
Yes.
So the best time to buy that kind of insurance is not while you're sick. Mm-hmm. You don't get health insurance while you're sick. You get it before.
Right.
And sure enough, we've all seen what happened beginning with USAID and some of the other things.
Right.
And they are in a crisis mode. Right. And now it's difficult to get everybody together.
Yeah.
The other thing is some of those options that you will come up with through a good scenario planning exercise, a good war game, mm-hmm. it might take you 3-4 months to implement,
right?
Build the right partnerships.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And when your hair's on fire,
yes.
And more importantly, everyone in your industry is now reacting, those options won't even be available.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's what concerns me about where we are now.
Right.
And a lot of the executives I've met who are like, we got it. We're just going to wait this out. Is when the watering hole shrinks and all of you rush to the new watering hole, some of you won't be able to drink from it.
Right. Right.
So you really want to be ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can vouch for that, Sheldon. As I said earlier, you know, starting in 2017, we first felt the effects of tariffs. But in 2019, we began to really experience the effect of export controls.
Oh, yeah.
And
I keep forgetting about that sequence.
Yeah. Yes. Huawei was the first real hard, you can't do business. And, you know, what I found over the course of 2019 till I left last year, I mean, we were in that hair on fire crisis mode just the entire time because the government was relentless of, publishing your entity listings. And if your entity, you're doing businesses on there, you got to do something. The Russia situation came in. Sanctions, it was just this constant, and I have to say, I agree with you that there was very little time at that moment to step back and scenario plan because you were just every single day was trying to keep that business moving, right? Mm-hmm. Right. You could. I will though say just kind of one thing I did learn from that experience was while we went through the crisis, there was incredible motivation to find different solutions. And to find the sort of things that you may have found if you had scenario planned, or maybe things you never would have thought of because you had to, right? Mm-hmm. And so although yes, it's better to scenario plan ahead of time and know your options and so on, if you find yourself in that crisis, it's amazing what you will all of a sudden find to do differently to manage it. You know what I'm saying?
Necessity is the mother of invention.
Exactly. Yes.
And I agree. Intel had a good culture of being able to think creatively while the building is on fire.
Yeah.
I don't know that every company does that,
right.
though.
Right.
But yeah, I agree. And some of the principles would still have been used even in the minute. Now, I personally, I had P&L responsibility for a division for a couple of years till I realized it's not my thing.
Yeah.
I live in the strategic world and special situations, like making 100 decisions a week is not my thing. But I did realize that these tools and frameworks, you can still apply them in the middle of sort of the firefight.
Absolutely. Yes.
As long as you're willing to recognize it's going to feel a little bit more painful to slow down for an afternoon, but it's always beneficial to get better options.
Yes.
Always.
Yes.
No matter when.
Yeah.
I think it's better to do it before you really, really need them.
Yep.
But I think you and I both know there's going to be a bunch of companies that will hear this and say, we'll still wait.
Yeah.
So for those who are going to be in that camp, it's never too late.
Yes.
Make the investment.
Yeah. Well, we found, I think one of my points here is that we found that as we went through this, and when you're going through it, you don't know what's around the next corner. You don't know the long term, but you find yourself in some ways, you are scenario planning as you're going forward, right? I talked earlier about we did this enterprise risk manager every year. And I found over the course of those 5-6 years that in light of all the different risks with the company, the trade, we had our own box trade, the trade risks continue to move up to the right corner year by year because
that's interesting.
Because
you were assessing it each year.
We were assessing every year. And so the next year came around and we looked at what happened and where we saw things coming. And we would move that up because we knew the impact. And then with that risk analysis, you also talked about what were you going to do to mitigate that. So in some ways, it was kind of, we found ourselves in an ongoing scenario planning about the next, you know, the next horizon we were going to do.
Great point, which I totally missed, was the, if you think of it as just an exercise you do once, mm-hmm. I think it's beneficial. But I think what you mentioned mm-hmm. is where the real magic hits, mm-hmm. is you're doing the exercise on an ongoing basis and you're seeing how your risk landscape or your threat environment yes. is changing over
yes.
time.
Yes.
So if you couple that with the point we were making earlier of
yeah.
start from where your supply chain or yeah. whatever's at risk yes. fails,
yes,
and you're going through that and mapping them all,
yeah.
you'll be far more resilient.
Yeah.
I think that's a beautiful marriage of concepts.
Well, we on this enterprise risk, you know, matrix, we would have on the vertical, we would have the impact. You know, what was the risk? You know, was this, you know, a few shipments might get stuck, or was this like, we won't do business at all? And, this, mm-hmm. and then you had, you know, on the horizontal, you had the likelihood, right? So what is the likelihood? Is this something that, you know, once in a million years it might happen? The impact was always great. Because if you ask the question, what happens if we can't ship? It's a huge impact. So the impact was always kind of high from a trade perspective. But what changed over those years was the likelihood. It became mm-hmm. more and more likely that we were going to see more restrictions on China, restrictions on equipment. Pretty soon you can't ship the technology. Pretty soon you couldn't even provide goods that came from another country like Europe or Korea or yeah. Japan. And so I think what we found was that likelihood. And that's why our score as a trade organization kept going up to that right corner because of that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. We have a process. Mm-hmm. So our scenario planning is one thing. Then scenario analysis, we separate as what you're talking about, yeah. where you're
yeah.
constantly taking a look and you're taking in new information and updating. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what we found is that if you can get your decision makers or your leadership team to actually specify their risk tolerance, mm-hmm. So it's like, Jeff, when that export control thing gets mm-hmm. to the upper right corner,
yeah,
and you're telling me that it's more than a 30%,
yes,
I want us to have insurance for it.
Yes.
Below 20, we'll deal with it.
Right.
When you can get those conversations going, right, so you can scenario plan, yeah. then you're doing the analysis, yeah. and it doesn't sound like you were spending weeks on this stuff.
No.
But how much time do you think, or percentage of your time as a leader of a trade organization, were you spending on this?
Well, there was, you know, in typical company fashion, there was a timeline because you had, you know, ours wasn't the only input for the enterprise. There was a lot. So you had, you had set times that you kind of had to deliver your analysis and you had report outs and so on. But if I added it all up, I'm sure I spent 10, 20% of my time on that.
Yeah.
Just looking at that. I mean, it was constant. It wasn't always in the format of that project or that deliverable, but it was just part of the nature of what we were doing because, you know, every time the U.S. government dropped a new control, the first question that executives wanted to know is, what's the impact?
Mm-hmm.
And then, so rather than trying to figure out how we're going to solve this, we had to spend time going to figure out the impact. So,
because you want to know, is it worth solving?
Exactly. Yeah. So I think, I have to say that during those 7 years, I probably learned more in my career than any other time. It was just that intense.
I'll bet.
And in that intensity, you learn. I mean, quickly learn where you learn how to assess, you learn how to strategically plan, how to make sure you're looking at scenarios, you learn how to communicate. I did a whole podcast earlier on communication because I had so many lessons on communication. And many of us in the compliance, I'll say in the compliance field in particular, we struggle with that. Very good at understanding rules and so on, but how do you communicate that in a way that people can really grasp it and do something about it? So,
yeah, there's a whole field of study on risk communication out there. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal. Mm-hmm. So even in some of the most volatile times, it's 20% of your time.
Yeah.
Right. So for any listener that's thinking, oh my goodness, this sounds like an overwhelming thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm hearing you say when it was hitting the fan, this was 20%.
Yeah.
That's cheap insurance.
Yeah.
Cheap insurance. Yeah. Great executive growth too.
Absolutely.
From what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I love that point of if you have a process where you're at least getting a chance to revisit these, you can see the threat environment shifting over time.
Yes.
And as things become more and more imminent, then you can start having conversations around, do we share this risk? Do we mitigate it? Do we manage it?
It? And I can think of a couple of scenarios. Knowing what I know now, I wish we had done that. Mm-hmm. We would have been better prepared when the situation happened to be able to move forward. And then instead it became a, rather than 20% of my time, it became 60 or 70% of my time. Well, Sheldon, this has been a fascinating discussion. And I think both of us are very passionate about this.
Absolutely.
And I'd like to just, as we wrap up, just give you an opportunity to share with the listeners, is there some key messages that you want them to take away from our discussion today?
Sure. I think there's probably three things I want people to take away from the conversation. Is the first one is don't wait. Wait and see is not a good strategy, as we've kind of talked about. And hopefully we've convinced you is you want to be able to preserve your optionality. And that becomes harder and harder to do the more that you have to react to a situation versus being proactive. So don't wait. Wait and see is bad. That would be number one. Number two is to focus on the value of information, or this concept of the value of information. Mm-hmm. Information that can't actually change your decisions has no value. Mm-hmm. And that's hard because you may have built up processes or habits to source a lot of data. But if it's not going to alter your choice, drop it and widen the aperture, because as we're beginning to be more and more uncertain about more and more things, you need to save some bandwidth to go a bit wider. And then the third is, even though I would highly recommend doing a rigorous version of this or a well-facilitated war game, any scenario planning or risk simulation exercise that you do that's thoughtful is better than not doing anything.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you have a way that folks can get a hold of you if they're interested in talking more about this with you or looking at what you offer in terms of what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on LinkedIn. I think I'm the only Sheldon Bernard associated with A440 Management LLC out there. I'm happy to keep the conversation going. Our website is www.a440mgt.com. And this is our year for trying to create more awareness and comfort with these tools. So love to hear from people, and looking forward to catching up with you again soon, Jeff.
Yeah, likewise. I think this topic has been incredibly timely given how so many of us are feeling. Mm-hmm. And I think you've given us some great ideas and some tools and some thoughts about how important this is. And I hope folks will take advantage of that. So thank you so much, Sheldon, for joining me on Written Reflections. It's been a great conversation. I wish we could go on and on. It's fantastic. But we'll have more time together. Looking forward to working with you as we go forward. So thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for listening today. This has been Written Reflections, and I will be talking with all of you soon. Thank you.